Hi everybody, it's Tom from Cricket Coach 365 and welcome to our latest podcast. Hi everybody, it's Tom from Cricket Coach 365 and welcome to our latest podcast. We're in the nervous 90s in terms of episodes and today I'm delighted to be joined by Kari Carswell. Kari is head of women's cricket for Middlesex and for the MCC. She's a former Scotland captain and coach herself and also had some great experience of coaching down in New Zealand. So an abundance of knowledge, looking forward to hearing all about her life in cricket. So welcome to the podcast, Kari.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure, absolute pleasure. So the
What number am I? 93, 94.
So oh,
okay, got a bit to go.
Yeah, we've still got half a dozen to reach the century, but we don't want to stop now. So first question I ask of all of our guests is to give you the opportunity to describe, explain or tell that first memory, that first recollection you have of being interested or showing some interest in and around the game of cricket.
I remember vividly, my brother, I've got two brothers, but Gav's the one that's nearest to me in age. And he used to be, during the summer holidays, we used to watch the test matches. And then in the lunch intervals or the, you know, the tea breaks, I'd be forced to go outside and play cricket in our backyard. And we would play our test matches during the school holidays. And at times I didn't really think I was getting a fair crack. You know, I had to do a lot of bowling and face a lot of short pitch deliveries from him. He was playing at school and at club. And at times, I probably felt like I was a bit of a guinea pig for him. But yeah, I think as I probably got a little bit better, we became more competitive in our backyard test matches. And it was just such a cool way to get into the game. And I've got a lot to thank him for, to be honest. You know, he was probably the biggest driving force in getting me to play cricket. If it hadn't been for those backyard games and sitting watching the test matches at home, then who knows what I would have been doing, but I don't think it would have been cricket.
Yeah, well done, Gav. Although, as you rightly point out, it sounds to me as though it was a little bit one-sided initially. But were you following any particular team or any particular players in those test matches? And so when you went into the backyard, were you trying to emulate a certain bowler, for example?
I don't think so. I certainly can't remember. I think it used to be when test match cricket was on like BBC Two.
Yeah.
Back in the day, and you know, I just people like Darren Goff spring to mind. You know, watching him running into ball, and it was always at England test matches around cricket. So like that's who I didn't really realize that, you know, like Scotland had a cricket team or anything like that.
Yeah,
it was all that like we had English role models, male role models. I might add, growing up.
Yeah.
And I just remember watching, you know, like Graham Thorpe batting, Alex Stewart behind the stumps, and it was just like, oh, that's so cool. Like, their skill level is awesome. And I think at that time, when I was growing up, you know, the test match team, the English test match team wasn't in their pomp or their heyday.
No.
And I remember, just watching them getting beaten, I think, by the Aussies probably more often than not.
Yeah.
I can't remember specific games, but in crowds booing the players and those kind of things. And I think that's what I remember from my early childhood. And I think the more, you know, obviously I've grown up and watched cricket on the telly and realised that Scotland had a men's team and then, you know, the women's team was formed later, much later down the line.
Mm.
But my early memories are all about in Cork taking those 7-4 against,
yeah.
I think it was 7-4 against
West Indies. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember vividly watching that on the telly and thinking, right, okay, let's go ahead and try and recreate the amount of movement he got. Mm. Couldn't do it with a tennis ball, obviously, but still gave it a right good crack.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And I think it's important that people understand that the first of all, cricket was on terrestrial television, back in the day, pre sort of commercial Sky and BT Sport and all the rest of it. But it was men's cricket pretty much exclusively. And England were not that good. So to be able to look up to individuals as a youngster and as a young female as well is quite interesting to hear how you were still switched onto it, albeit through the influence of your brother. So when did you first get into a club yourself and start playing? What, tell us a little bit about that.
I can't remember the exact timeline. I would have been about 11 or 12, and Gav was going along to a summer camp at our cricket club at Stirling. And we lived about half an hour away, 20 minutes away, whatever it was. And we had to get the bus, and getting the bus was a bit of a novelty for us because Mum used to drive us everywhere. But we were getting the bus this day, and Dad was coming with us. And from the bus station in Stirling up to the old cricket ground, it felt like you were walking miles. Like, it probably isn't actually that far, but like as a young 11-year-old, oh my God, are we nearly there? Are we nearly there? And I remember getting up there and walking and getting to sit down for a little bit while he was playing. And I remember being like, oh, this is really cool. Like, look at the amount of fun that he's having. But I wasn't a club member at that time. So first day went, sat and walked, cool. Next day, same thing, go back, walk up from the bus station, the trek. And I just remember the coach saying to me, do you want to join in? And I was like, oh, yeah, why not? That looks, I reckon I would enjoy this. So you kind of always look at, Dad for approvals, all right, if I join in, and then Gav, do you mind if, can I come and play too? And I guess from that moment onwards, I would go to the regular weekly practice or whatever it was up down in Stirling, and just like it went from there really. That first moment of the coach saying, do you want to join in? Do you want to play? And loving it and thinking this is really, really cool. And you know what? It never ever occurred to me until looking back that I was the only girl. Like it didn't really register probably. I was just there because I was having fun, I was enjoying it, and the guys were really quite welcoming, all the other boys and the coaching staff. Yeah, we're really accepting, I guess, of having a girl come along and join in their stuff.
Yeah, and good for the coach to ask you in the first place, considering it was all boys prior to that. So he or she should get recognition for that too, I suppose. So that was the start of that journey. The you spoke really articulately there about the long trek, the bus journey, as opposed to getting a lift from your mum. Seeing your brother enjoy it so much, and then you being given the opportunity to get stuck in and loving it straight away. So what happened in terms of Stirling Cricket Club and yourself and getting established in playing?
Stirling, so I would get selected to go and play in the quick cricket tournaments. I remember quite playing in a tournament and getting hit. And getting hit, I can't remember if it was a beam or a bouncer, but I got hit in the lip, got a bit of a fat lip. But in that same tournament, I took a hat trick. Yeah, and you think you've made it, right? Quick cricket, take a hat trick, world's your oyster. So I've got some quite vivid memories of that. And when I moved up to, I was desperate to get into the hard ball setup. But you think you graduate, don't you, from quick cricket? So I was always saying, oh, can I get a shot? Can I get up to the hard ball? And to be fair to the coaches at the time, they kind of really looked after me and said, oh, look, just give it another couple of weeks a year, and then you'll get a taste of it. And to be fair, I don't really remember huge amounts of my hard ball cricket at Stirling, if I'm being honest, because I wasn't that amazing. Like, we had some really, really talented boys. And I remember getting the odd over or the odd couple of overs here and there as a youngster growing up. Like, batting wise, can't ever think that I batted probably above six or seven in the boys' team. But you know what? It didn't really matter to me. I was there, I was part of a team. I was part of a team that had some fun, had some success. And just to be one of them and be accepted was enough for me at that age. And I also played cricket all through my school days. Or when I got to like 11 or 12 at school, I played in the boys' team at school as well. And I probably remember more about those games, junior hardball games that we would play every Saturday against other schools. You know, I was really fortunate. I went to Dollar, I've had my back home. So I remember, again, same thing, being accepted by the majority of people. Look, there's always one or two that want to make your life a little bit difficult. But over the course of my whole, you know, school years and playing underage boys cricket, it was pretty much accepted. You know, yeah, there was a few comments when you rocked up, oh, they've got a girl, they must be rubbish. But I probably didn't really start performing as a cricketer until I was about 15 or 16. Okay. Like, my early years as a cricketer, I was probably pretty hopeless, I'm not going to lie. You know, I played for fun. I can't recall ever taking many wickets, scoring many runs in my youth. And I think I scored my first 50, like, when I was 16 or something. And that's, you know, if you're looking at it nowadays, young girls, you know, reflecting on the season that we've had with our Middlesex County age group girls, we have under 13 scoring hundreds and, you know, taking five for us and scoring 50s. And I was like, well, geez, I wasn't 16 or 17 until I got my first 50. But it didn't harm me, put it that way. It made me quite determined as well, quite a resilient character, I think.
Yeah, okay. So I think you're being, you know, you're probably being very humble in reflecting upon those early years, because I think, you know, whilst you say you played for fun and you felt accepted, you know, you were still the only girl. And that, I think, implies that you had to have a certain amount, not just resilience, but also a little bit of competitiveness, probably. Yeah, and also that character to be able to fit in. I know you said people made you feel accepted, which is really important and part of it. But for a lot of people, that would have probably been you know, quite an apprehensive environment to be in for so long. And for you to say, oh, I didn't score a 50 till I was 15 or 16. You know, we all know at that age, you know, if you're not in a you know, now, like now, county age group systems where you play 40 over cricket, 50 over cricket, time cricket, you're only ever playing either T20 or you're playing a quick cricket tournament where you don't get the opportunity. Yeah, you're not batting for as long. So your hat trick, I would say, is a massive highlight. On another occasion, I would ask you to reflect and tell us about the, you know, how each of those wickets fell, whether they were all bowled or whether they were caught or whatever. But let's move on to, you know, those later teenage years where you started to feel as though you were performing at a higher level, and how you must have then caught the eye and got you know, involved in, you know, more representative cricket from a girls and women's perspective.
Yeah, I'm just want to go back and touch on something. So all I knew was playing with boys. I didn't know that anything outside of that existed, and in Scotland it didn't at that time. Until I remember, I spoke about the coach who asked me to come and get involved, Raymond Bond, who deserves huge amounts of credit, not just for my career but for hundreds of people that went through that club system at Stirling. I remember him telling me that they were looking at starting, I think it was a Scotland women's team, and this lady from Edinburgh was coming through to run a session, I think it was. And that's when I was like, oh, there's actually other women and girls that play cricket, because it just never, it wasn't even on my radar, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of where, I guess, my career just propelled. So we ended up, Grange Cricket Club in Edinburgh formed the ladies team. I can't remember the years that it formed, but that was almost like girls and women from, you know, kind of Edinburgh, the Central Belt. If you wanted to play women's cricket, that's where you went.
Yeah.
So I went there and we played in the Northumberland League on a Sunday. So we would travel down to the various different teams in the Northumberland League and we would play against them. And I can't remember playing too much at home, but I remember the meeting early in the morning, driving down, playing a game of cricket and coming home. And we had quite a strong, that Grange team at the time was quite strong. I think I'd be right in saying that they won the league on a number of occasions. And then there was a decision, think it was around about 99, 2000, that Scotland would form a women's team.
Right.
A women's cricket team. And, you know, there was a cast a net wide to see how many girls and women were playing in Scotland. And, you know, it's nowhere near the numbers that they've got now. But it was quite exciting. You were getting an opportunity, potentially, to represent your country.
Yeah.
And then because we were playing in that Northumberland League, the Scottish girls, we got an opportunity to play county championship cricket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to the week-long, I think it was, I'm going to say festival, but it's the wrong word, competition and represent your county against all these other people that have got women's and girls. But, like, it blew my mind. I was like, oh, my goodness, there's loads of people in England playing cricket. So that was quite exciting as well. And it was when I was about, I must have been 16, because I got a trial for England and I got into the England under-17 team.
Wow.
And we played a series against Holland and I think we won, I can't quite remember, but, you know, there was people within that set up, that team, that went on to have some pretty good careers. And I remember being like, this is pretty cool, you know? This is quite nice. It's what an opportunity to go out and represent your country. And then after what once Scotland formed their team, I probably had a decision to make, or I did have a decision to make, kind of what route was I going to go down? Was I going to try and push for a career within that England pathway and that England setup, or did I want to do my stuff for Scotland? And I made a decision to do my stuff for Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
I saw myself as I can say, well, I probably thought this at the time as well. I didn't want to be a professional cricketer. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to play cricket professionally. I enjoyed what I was doing, but I had a real sense of my skills led me to developing cricket in the game that I loved and had given me so much joy when I was 18, 19, that I wanted to actually develop the game back home. And that's what I did. I spent a lot of my career there. Playing cricket in Scotland, but also working for Cricket Scotland, coaching them and trying, you know, my damnedest to get the game up and running there. And I think that's something that, you know, I look back on now and think, yeah, you know what, that's pretty cool what's going on in Scotland. And we've produced some pretty handy cricketers if you look at, you know, the list of girls that are now making names for themselves in the regional competitions or the 100, or actually further afield overseas. So that's something that I am proud of. Who knows what would have happened if I had gone down the other route and decided, no, I wanted to try and make it as a cricketer, a standalone cricketer. But really fond memories of the early days and the stuff that you had to do to get to places, or the money that you had to pay, or the equipment that you had, or the training sessions that you had. Like, a different world from today.
Yeah, and it's only 20 years. So I think that's the thing that, you know, needs to be reminded to everybody, that in, you know, such a short period of time, the game has moved on massively, you know, at all levels, from grassroots, juniors, through all the way to the very top level that you just touched on in regards to the 100 and, you know, international level. But yeah, so, you know, when you, even the fact that you travelled from Edinburgh to Northumberland, that's not like half an hour. You know, that's a good few hours to get to. I don't know where you played, whether you played at Coldstream, at Alnwick, you know, Warkworth, or whether you remember any of those places. But I think a lot of people who've come on as guests have talked about the fact that when they grew up and they started playing, and yours is different because you didn't have that awareness of other people playing as much as you did as until you started going into to Northumberland and seeing what happened in England. But the thing that remained consistent for everybody was, if you were playing cricket 20 years ago or further, longer ago, the distances you had to travel to get games were enormous.
Yeah.
And the costs involved were significant. So it wasn't very accessible. So you had to be keen, you know, you had to be enjoying it. Otherwise, you just wouldn't have carried on. So you decided to stick with Scotland. You decided as well, you understood yourself well enough to know that you wanted to also give back in terms of your understanding of the game and developing other people, and creating other opportunities. So tell us a little bit about how that unfolded. And I mean, you know, you went on to, you said, and by way of me introducing you, you were, you played for Scotland, you captained Scotland and were coach for Scotland. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I studied in Newcastle.
So did I.
Studied sports development and coaching. And I think the more that I kind of got into like what that was all about and, you know, my cricket side of things, I was like, this would be really cool to try and develop something back home. And there was an opportunity, I remember, in 2003 to become a development officer for one of the local development groups that covered kind of my patch, Stirling, Clackmannanshire and Falkirk. And it was about taking cricket, you know, old school kind of sports development, taking cricket into the schools, giving kids a really positive experience and then trying and getting them down to the cricket club. And, you know, I think when you're immersed in a sport, like you love cricket, you find it really challenging. Like, why would you not want to play cricket? Like, what do you mean you don't get it? Like, you just got to stand there and hit a ball and then run. But you've got to swap sides and it causes all kinds of confusion, as you can imagine. And the more I got into doing that and encouraging, you know, clubs to run youth sections and schools to run little teams and invite them along to tournaments, the more of it, I loved it. I loved engaging with people and talking to them about all the benefits that cricket can give you. It's not just about whacking a ball, but the teamwork, the confidence it gives you, the ability to, you know, think strategically and all those kind of things. That's where I was really drawn into it. So I started going through like the traditional coaching pathway, doing your level one at uni, and then a couple of years later your level two. At the same time as trying to play cricket for Scotland, I was just a player at that time. And we were I was going to say pretty average. Like, we didn't have the player base in the female game back home. And I remember going to our first European Championships, I think it was 2001, 2000. Probably 2001, can't quite remember. We went to play in, against the Irish team, the Dutch, and an England development team. I think there might even have been an under-19 team. And we came to select in our squad. I was still relatively young. Came to select in our squad, and we literally were picking from about 16 people. And you know, we went there. We had done that same kind of nucleus of players had played in that county championships that I spoke about. So we thought we were all right. You know, we would do all right against some of the other teams. And it was just different level. Different level. And you remember, like, being smashed around the park by some of the international girls from these other teams and getting bowled out. I don't think we made 100 once. And that was a kind of real reality check of, we've got a long way to go here. And I always remember somebody saying to me, you know, just stick with it. 10 years' time, in 10 years' time, we'll have a competitive team. And I was like, 10 years' time? Jesus, like, I'll be late 20s. Like, can we not have success now? And of course, you know, understanding how development works and all the rest of it, they're probably right. And if you look, you know, fast forward 20 years, you know, that Scotland team now is probably the most competitive it's been, and that's really cool. But, you know, the number of times that we played games of cricket and that we were just, we didn't perform. Like, we could perform every now and again, but we weren't consistent. We didn't have consistent games. We didn't have consistent trainings. Yes, that's brilliant. It's all changed now. But back then, you were kind of scrambling around to play, to get fixtures and to play. And you had this one event every 3 years or whatever it was, 4 years. That was your opportunity to shine. And that was a struggle. That was a struggle in the early days. We weren't competitive.
Yeah, but again, I think, as you suggested, you know, the talent pool would have been a lot smaller. So you weren't comparing apples with apples. Not that you would feel that way when you were out on the field, I'm sure. Yeah. But looking back, you must, you know, I suppose, reflect on in regards to, it wasn't comparing like with like. So it might be a little bit more on a par now in terms of infrastructure, systems, funding, etc. But when you were playing, it clearly wasn't, you know, and other nations were far more advanced in terms of their infrastructure and their development.
So, and I think the infrastructure for our women's team in Scotland in the early days was built in sand. We had no women's club team. We didn't have any women's club teams in Scotland until 2010.
There you go.
You know, that's only 12 years ago. Yeah. But yet we had a national team for the years before that. And yeah, no wonder we struggled to compete against these teams who had X number of league teams or whatever. But I tell you one thing, it was bloody good fun. And you loved it, and you know the off the field stuff that happened, and that you remember. Yeah, we might not have won too much on the field, and we might have had the odd good performance along the way. But yeah, you had great fun, and you made friends for life from different countries. And I think that's the beauty sometimes, or it is the beauty of sport, in my opinion.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that again, it probably says quite a lot about you in terms of your personality and character and learning style, that you, despite the fact that you were getting hammered as a team, you as an individual enjoyed it. You know, to say it was bloody great fun, that wouldn't be the case for everybody. And even now, in terms of, you know, my coaching roles in junior club cricket, there are more kids that enjoy playing with their friends rather than challenging themselves to play against and with kids that are better than them. Whereas when I was younger, I always wanted to play with older kids and challenge myself to try to be as good as them. I think it says a lot about your competitiveness and wanting to be as good as you could be when put on the playing field against these other teams that were further developed. So beyond your playing time in the Scotland women's team, you were building up your reputation as a coach, and you've already alluded to the fact that, you know, cricket isn't just about the playing the game. It's about fun. It's about friendships. It's about life skills. So what happened next in terms of job opportunities and career development within coaching and side of things?
Yeah, well, there was an opportunity to become player coach of Scotland.
Oh, okay.
And about, this is where I should probably have done my research and looked stuff up. Probably around 2014, I think it was. And I was like, got nothing to lose, you know? But it wasn't as if we were world champions or anything like that. But I had a sense of how to play cricket. You know, I'd really taken a little bits to coaching and the best bits from all the coaches that I had worked with. And thought, right, okay, I could give this a right good go here, and I reckon I can make us a little bit better. And I still was wanting to play, because I was only, I think it was probably about 25, 26. Maybe somebody will probably tell me that I was a bit older. We had some real good youngsters starting to come through the system, and you could see a good future for the game in Scotland. I just put in place, things that were probably quite straightforward and quite simple in my mind. I just put things in place, like we trained more, we played more games, we played against boys teams, we cast our net a bit wider. And then gradually, you know, I coached for 5 years, gradually our results started getting, you know, better. We brought in some analysts, different players played, you know, defined roles for people in the teams. On-field performance is starting getting better. I must say, in that first year that I coached, though, my win record was pretty woeful. And I remember saying to my assistant coach at the time, saying, geez, like, what are we doing? What are we doing wrong? Like, we're putting all this work and effort into this group of people, and we weren't really performing. So fast forward, we got to the global qualifying event in Thailand to go to, I think it was a T20 World Cup. We met Ireland in the semi-finals. If we'd won the semi-final, we were going to our first World Cup, which would have been brilliant. We performed really, really well throughout that tournament. And we just became, we come unstuck against them. They were a nemesis. I think we'd beaten them once in my whole career. And that was no different on that day. You know, we in a T20, and we got 90 odds, and they chased it down quite comfortably. After that tournament, I knew that I had probably given it my best shot, and it was up to somebody else to try and take us forward. But I still wanted to play for another, and I played for another year after that. And then that was it. Enough was enough. I wanted to explore different opportunities. I'd moved to New Zealand. I coached the Northern Spirit first class cricket team for a couple of years over there, and then coached New Zealand under 19 women. Just at the start of the pandemic, was preparing them for the Under 19 World Cup that was due to happen. Obviously, it didn't happen. And with no real assurances of when, obviously, COVID was going to finish, took the opportunity to come back and work for Middlesex and MCC. So it's been a bit of a roller coaster. It's been a blooming good ride as well.
Do you think it's too... I don't know how to phrase this, but when you said that, you know, in 5 years of being the player coach, your win ratio in your first year was not great at all, and it took a longer period of time to start to see more wins actually come to pass. But would you say that winning in that first year was your only sole goal, or was there more to it? Because I think in sport we can get incredibly obsessed. Because we're in a performance environment, the higher we go up, but we get incredibly obsessed by winning or championships or trophies or medals, whereas there's far more to it, as you know, I'm sure, beneath the surface of that iceberg technique model. So what are your thoughts on that, just quickly?
All other things around getting the players to understand how to play cricket was probably our biggest challenge. We didn't play enough. You know, we still talk about it now. We don't play enough cricket. Mm. But that's really, when you're presenting to a board, that's a hard sell.
Mm.
You know, you're going and asking for more money and more investment in your little part of an organisation, and you're not winning on the field. You know, some people, winning is everything. But when you're trying to, you know, run more sessions, get people better, the average age of the team was really, really young, probably still is quite young, play more games of cricket, give people real cool experiences. Like, some of those things are quite hard to measure.
Mm.
But winning and losing is pretty easy to measure. And that's something that that's something that we always jump towards. It's the same as people getting selected or deselected based on their stats and their average.
Is it totally? Totally.
You know, instead of looking at the bigger picture and all the other things that person can bring to an environment or a team. So, and I must say that, like, my opinion on that changed drastically the older and wiser I've got. You know, maybe in my early days it was about that, but now it's probably not so much about that. But you have to perform, don't get me wrong, but...
Mm. Yeah, but
there's
you know,
a lot of things that contribute to a player's performance.
Exactly. And you were talking about, you know, a county age group, under 13 girls for Middlesex, you know, players scoring hundreds. Well, that's incredible. You know, nobody's going to devalue or dismiss somebody as young as that in that system scoring 100. But I'm sure you would agree with me that if you then broke down, you know, the game that player scored 100 in against what team, what kind of conditions, compared to somebody who perhaps hasn't scored 100 at 13 but has contributed in other ways that isn't necessarily as obvious to measure, but still has a value to it. Cricket, I think, is an unbelievable game to be able to derive an awful lot of value from, over and above the hardest the most obvious KPIs in being runs and wickets.
But we're fascinated with it, aren't we? Like, you go onto your boards, play cricket, and that's all that's measured. You know, that's all that people are looking at the end of the day. And I think trying to get that message across of, actually, we're trying to develop 39 cricketers under 13 county age group level instead of just 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And that's quite difficult for some people to get their head around.
It is.
Because it's all about the here and the now. But these kids are 12.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I don't know if they're going to be an international cricketer.
Yeah. In any environment of youth cricket, youth sport, you don't know at 12 how far they're going to stay in the game or whether they're going to want to stay in the game in another year's time. So, you know, your point about persuading and influencing the board to provide funding, investment, support in that regard, I think is a very, very important one for everyone to understand on this topic. But in terms of child development, player development, it isn't just about the obvious performance statistics. It's there's far more holistic, non-obvious KPIs that contribute. And you know, that may be an area for another podcast for me to think about beyond the 100 in this one. So just quickly to finish off, you very, again, in a very modest way, you said, oh, you know, went over to New Zealand, I just did a bit of coaching, happened to be first class and under 19s women's, and then came back after COVID and, you know, got the job with Middlesex and MCC. So tell us about your main responsibilities in your current roles, either at Middlesex or MCC first.
Yeah, Middlesex, I look after the player pathway, so from under-11s all the way through to our seniors, and, you know, making sure that we're providing that holistic programme that we've spoken about, you know, making sure that we're giving girls a real positive experience of being within a county system, giving them plenty of training opportunities, plenty of game match opportunities, but also that time to reflect and grow and be individuals.
Brilliant.
So that's quite important to me in terms of the players, but then also engaging with our coaches, our managers, our administrators, our clubs. How can we make things better for the whole of the game, the whole of the women's game? And that's a challenge because X club plays Y club on a Friday night and on a final and they want to win. So, like, I get it and I understand it, but actually sometimes you just want to sit down and be right, what's the best thing for this sport right now, right here? And that's an ongoing challenge, and that's not just a challenge that I've got. We have a challenge in every county, I would imagine. But making sure as well that we've got a pathway for our coaches that come in. You know, you don't get pigeonholed, you have an opportunity to develop your skills and show your personality as well. We don't want rigid people that, you know, there's no playbook for this. It's, you know, this is what we kind of want to expect. How you get there and how you coach, it's entirely up to you. And have some fun, you know, enjoy what you're doing. Coaching in the county pathways not going to make you a millionaire, so you've got to come along and give up your time and enjoy it. And with the MCC role there, we were wanting to increase the number of female playing members that we've got, and then also increase the number of opportunities that those females have of playing in different environments against different people at different times. The playing programmes for the MCC this year was 42 days. We want to increase that. But to increase that playing offer, you need more players, and it's about trying to get out there and get around and tell people what MCC women do and what we're about.
I think one of those fixtures, which is an established one in the diary, is against a Cheshire County League team. Yeah, you know, Martin Saxon, who is one of the key stakeholders in Cheshire Women's County League, he spoke very enthusiastically about that fixture, being, you know, proud to be associated with the league that puts forward a team to play against the MCC women. So it's nice to kind of hear it from the other's perspective in hearing you today. But, you know, it sounds like you've got a very fulfilling couple of roles there, which isn't just all about players, but also about coaches. And it's also about opportunities for as many people as possible. But I think the thing that I'll take away from listening to you is that kind of consistent message of fun, remembering that, you know, cricket is a game, and that in order to get as much out of it, you know, there has to be an element of fun to it. And I think one of the things that you said which stands out for me is, you know, lifelong friendships. It's one of the things we talk about in our club, and I'm very lucky to be part of a, you know, in a role where I'm coaching a group of 16, 17 year old teenagers, of which we've got two girls in amongst 14, 15 boys. But they've known each other now for 9, 10 years. And, you know, whatever happens to them beyond school and college, I've got every confidence that they'll remain friends for a very long time. That's been through their playing of cricket. So it's been an absolute delight to listen to your really fascinating story from those early days of playing backyard cricket with Gav in the garden and wondering what's in it for me, to then, having that first experience of being asked to play, thanks to Raymond and the guys at Stirling Cricket Club, after you'd journeyed on the bus and wondered how long the journey was going to last for, to getting hit on the lip but getting a hat trick in quick cricket, then getting involved with school stuff at Dollar and then maybe starting to realise the talent that you had for the game, as a 15, 16 year old girl, when you started to score runs and take wickets and get more involved in women's stuff that took you beyond just the immediate area where you lived, to now being in the role that you are and the opportunity that you have to give so much help and support to so many people, younger and older, in the Middlesex and the MCC role. So thanks ever so much for sharing those stories and moments in your life so far involved in women and girls cricket, Carrie, and all the very best in the future.
Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Cheers. Thanks for listening, everybody. As a reminder, each Cricket Coach 365 podcast will be released every Friday at 6 p.m. on Spotify and Apple Play. After listening, please leave us a positive review on Spotify and share it with your friends and contacts. You can also follow us on Instagram at cricket_coach365. Have a great day.